Look, I don't remember if this podcast has bad language in it or not, but just to be on the safe side, let's say it does.
I added one more podcast to the giant podcast bin. Now you have plucked that podcast out and started listening. I took my microphone and found some human folk. Then I recorded all the noises while we spoke. My name is Adam Buxton, I'm a man. I want you to enjoy this, that's the plan.
Hello, Adam Buxton here. How are you doing, listeners? Thank you very much for joining me for podcast number 25. And as you've probably surmised, this podcast features more conversations with actor, writer and director Richard Ayoade, recorded in between filming bits and pieces for his TV show Travel Man, which I was a guest on back in May this year. Do you remember May 2016? I mean, it seemed pretty shit at the time, didn't it? But now, it's like the good old days. It was gravy. We didn't have any problems back in May. Anyway, Richard, the first convo chunk of today's episode was recorded by Lisbon's Tower of Belém, a beautiful spot down by the Rio Tajo, where tourists and the makers of travel shows wander around on the promenade there by the tower, soaking up the sun and taking photographs and being serenaded by buskers. You can probably hear a couple of them while Richard and I are talking in the first bit. And from there, we got into a van to travel to the next location. And while in the van, we continued podcasting. You know, no matter how bad things get, you've got to continue podcasting, don't you? And I was leading the discussion at that point on the important subject of pillows. Oh, thank goodness. Thank goodness someone has finally had the courage to step up and deal with the whole pillow situation. Yeah? Thanks very much, Buckles. You're welcome. And just to set the scene for that conversation, Richard was in the front seat of the van, the passenger seat. I was in the back next to Rachel, the AP, Sam, the sound man, and Nicola, the director, who had lost her voice at that point. I've forgotten the name of the driver. No disrespect to the driver. He was great, brilliant driving, and seemed like a terrific person. And very good looking. I should say, though, that the whole podcast is not just me talking to Richard about pillows, although it may seem like that because it goes on for around 15 minutes or so. But it's a fascinating, incisive, literally incisive, as you'll discover, chat about pillows. We also talk later on in the podcast about some more of Richard's big moments. And we had a couple of conversations about the good and the bad side of being a Woody Allen fan. So, yeah, that gets fairly involved towards the end of the podcast, as you'll hear. But first, back to the sunny promenade around the Tower of Belém in Lisbon, and a brief chat before Richard was called away to do some more of the kind of TV presenting that has previously seen him and his show, Travel Man, and the brilliant people that put the show together, nominated for a BAFTA. It's quite a moving thing to watch, let me tell you. Here we go. What did you do last night? Because we had 3 hours off before our night shoot.
Yes.
So what do you do in a hotel room? You don't have to say, like, absolutely everything you do in a hotel room.
Well, I read a little bit.
And do you sleep all right in hotels?
No. I like to not be away from home so much. Well,
kind of
ever.
Are you a pillow queen?
I had a coronation ceremony with a pillow.
Yeah, I get very queenie about pillows.
Sometimes you can get a very high pillow and it feels like you're sleeping on a stepladder or something.
Yeah. They weren't the worst pillows, but they were high pillows.
These were 4-foot high pillows that we had.
In the hotel in Lisbon?
Yeah.
Yeah, they were pretty high. I mean, don't you find that uncomfortable? I feel like I'm getting a crick.
It was a tiny bit uncomfortable, but it seems, you know, I don't know whether it'll make the national press our pillow discomfort.
I don't know. I think it's important.
It is important.
Because if it's happening to people as important as us...
Oh, I daren't even think.
It's happening to a lot of other people who don't have a podcast.
Can you imagine?
And can't get these issues out there.
There aren't people without podcasts in this day and age,
very
are there?
Few.
No, surely.
In America once, in California, where we were staying just outside Disneyland, the pillows were so massive there that I was driven to...
Bigger than the bed?
Yeah, I mean, a lot taller than the bed, yeah. Massive.
You couldn't get into the room. It was just all pillow. Oh, look,
oh, you've
see?
Been called. Yeah.
Right,
I'll tell you the end of the pillow story.
Don't forget that story.
Okay.
I have to stare forward because of my motion sickness.
Yeah, of course.
I'm not being imperious.
No, no. So the pillow in our rooms in this Disneyland hotel was so massive and stuffed, absolutely stuffed.
With Disney dreams.
With dreams and excitement that it was impossible to actually sleep on them. And there was nothing smaller or slimmer.
Right.
And I couldn't sleep. I was being driven mad. And I needed
something. This is a harrowing story.
I thought about stuffing clothes
yes.
inside the pillowcase, and I did that one evening, and that wasn't any good. So I thought, right, I'm going to have to take radical steps.
So what did you do?
I stabbed the pillow.
Come
and I
off
pulled
it.
Out the stuffing.
But that's damaging Disney property.
I know it is. It's vandalism.
You pulled out the stuffing?
Yeah, I pulled out about half or three quarters of the stuffing.
Oh,
before
crumbs.
The pillow became like a decent, actual, mouldable pillow that would support my head and be comfortable.
That and then feels like a kind of murder.
I had to... It really did. It felt like a bad crime. And it is, technically, isn't it? That's no good.
Yeah.
I felt like I'd been driven to it, and then I had to secrete the innards in a bin bag and sneak them out because I didn't want to get busted by the...
That is. That's like a Coen Brothers scene. What did you do? Bury it? Bury it deep in the ground?
No, I sneaked it out and put it in a waste bin outside
wow.
the hotel grounds.
And then what, sew the pillow back up?
I only made a small incision, you see.
This is really creepy.
And it took me ages to pull all the innards out.
And did you do it to everyone's pillow or just yours?
I was the only one that had that big a problem.
So everyone else was able to live with it?
Yeah.
But you went full crazy?
Yeah. But I was glad I did it, and then I was able to sleep for the rest of the time. So, Sam, what was your suggestion, Sam?
I would have folded up a towel and used a towel.
You would have used a towel?
Were you not listening when I said I stuffed T-shirts in a pillowcase?
A towel is... Have you not done that before? A towel's
no good.
A Disney towel?
Fluffy, no doubt. An ample size, I'm sure.
No, it's too hard. And T-shirts are too hard.
It's not got the kind of give that Adam's come to expect, living his life.
His memory foam.
He wants a pillow to mould precisely to his head.
Well, the thing is that when we stayed at the Doubletree Inn at Heathrow
the night before flying out
to Lisbon to do this show, and they had amazing pillows that were this... It was like sort of crazy memory foam or something. I don't know what it was. It was like clouds. Nicola, the director, has lost her voice, so it sounds as if she's just very twee.
sounds like she's telling
when she talks about pillows. It's like clouds. How is like clouds?
I'm going to pass.
She's actually got a medical condition.
Sorry.
But it was like clouds, exactly. And I loved them so much, and I was like, oh my God, I found the perfect pillow. Because I used to have the perfect pillow, and I used to take it with me everywhere. And in fact, I took it when I did Gadget Man, if you remember.
Oh, you did take a pillow with you.
I brought the pillow. Yeah, and
I remember that very clearly.
If you're listening to this and you're submental, then you could look up the clip on YouTube, me and Richard on a train.
Yeah.
And me with my pillow that I used to take everywhere. But then one time we went to Centre Parks.
And that was your pillow. Is that, do you still use that pillow now?
Oh, no, because I went to Centre Parks and I left it there.
Oh.
Yeah, you're supposed to change it every 6 months. You're
supposed to change your pillow every six months?
Yeah. Sweat and dead skin.
Are you? Who are you? Liberace? Every 6 months?
I mean, I don't follow these rules, but these are the rules.
I don't follow those rules. Well, I'm an outlier.
I've got two pillowcases.
Yeah.
That's okay, isn't it?
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Have you peeled off the clumpy inner one? What colour's your pillow?
Oh, it's...
What's Don Corleone saying?
Grey and...
I can't understand.
Black and white stripes.
Lying in the orange groves.
The actual pillow.
Yes.
It's stripey.
Is it?
Yeah. It's old school. It's a feathered downy one.
Sweaty.
So what are you doing with these old pillows you're discarding every
colour? Yeah, it's
half
a bit off colour, yeah. Get rid of it.
Are you chucking pillows every...
Oh. I'm not chucking... I'm probably... I'm 18 months, I'd say.
18 months? What do you do? You just bin it? You just bin the pillow?
Yeah.
That's so decadent.
I know.
I mean, I've got pillows from when I was a child.
No.
Yeah. Everyone's getting rid of their pillows in this van. And I know you're supposed
this
to...
This is TV money.
Yeah.
They use it once, throw it out the window.
You're supposed to get rid of your mattress after 10 years, right?
No way.
But we still have the same mattress. Turn the mattress. Yeah, we've turned it many, many times.
How often do you turn your mattress?
Once a year we turn it.
Once a year, that's a good day, isn't it? Mattress day. Do you do it in a ceremonial way, all the children with the incense
and
chanting?
We all get together, yeah.
Flip, New Year's Day, flip. Yeah.
And then hey, look at that stain. Remember?
Is it like the Wicker Man?
Yeah.
That was a hell of a night.
Surrounded by burning pillows.
Oh, all the good times, all the memories there, etched onto the mattress. But I was so tempted to... No, but I left my favourite pillow at Centre Parks.
Right.
And it was... And I phoned them up immediately and said, listen, I think I've left my favourite pillow there.
Was it not labelled?
No, it just looked like...
You don't label your pillows.
I should do now. From now on, I'm going to have a...
That's the first thing I do as soon as I buy them.
A monogrammed pillowcase. Have you heard that before about having to rotate your pillows?
I didn't know you had to get rid of them every 6 months. I guess, thinking about it...
Because breaking in a new pillow is really difficult.
I've never had that thought.
Do you not find that they smell weird? Like, especially goose down?
I think it's been so long since I've had new pillow that I can't even recall the sensation. I mean, I would live like a Unabomber but for the civilising influence of my wife.
Yeah. I found that the last few pillows...
I'd still be sleeping in Danger Mouse duvet.
Right
up
EJs.
Until my late 20s.
Yeah.
It was still, Thundercats duvet spreads. I mean, this is all right, isn't it? What's the problem? I still like them. You can't, at our age, have probably themed duvet sets
anymore. I'm sure
people do,
yeah. I would say that several...
It's a tough conversation, though.
Do you ever watch Gogglebox?
No.
Is it
good?
There's a couple of families in there, especially the big German guy. And he sits there sucking on his vape.
Right.
He and his wife are clearly into sort of dark metal, whatever the phrase is.
Dark matter.
So he sits there watching, and then when something outrageous happens, he'll just go, no fucking way. Don't fucking believe it. Oh, Jesus Christ. Anyway, right. I reckon that they've probably got...
Paddington Bear duvet.
Yeah.
Or at the very least, Pantera duvet covers.
Okay, yes.
That conversation about rotating the pillows made me think of a time that I was ridiculed on the radio when I admitted that me and my wife shared a toothbrush.
You were ridiculed for that?
Yeah. There was.
That seems unfair.
There was a wave of people getting in touch and saying, you're disgusting. Ugh, you're a freak. Of course you don't share a toothbrush. It's very, you know, and people getting really heated, like, that is dangerous. That is very dangerous.
Wow.
Because you are communicating infectious diseases all around your family home.
I see. Well.
I just thought, well, but when, you know, there's a lot of other intimate contact that's going on.
Sure.
In an unregulated way as well.
Well, I mean, my only question with that would be efficiency.
Yeah.
I guess you can't brush your teeth at the same time. But other than that, soar like a bird with your one toothbrush. I think it's a badge of closeness.
Exactly.
With you and your wife, and I applaud it.
Thanks.
I certainly wouldn't ring in to pillory you.
No, that's the word. People love an opportunity for some pillorying these days.
Yeah.
Hey, there are moments in everybody's life. Some are big and some are small moments. I have done the selection of the big moments from my mind. Now I'm going to share them with you all. Moments, big moments.
Moments, 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 big moments. Moments, big moments.
I do remember completing a sticker album, a football sticker album, when I was 11. And I was so... I was the first person in the class to complete the sticker album.
Panini, was
Panini
it?
Panini had made a series of excellent swaps.
Were they called
swaps.
Panini?
I think they were called Paninis.
Yeah.
They were toasted slightly.
Yeah.
And I finished the chart, and I was so pleased that I had a spontaneous nosebleed.
Did I thought, really?
This is a moment.
Did you seriously start getting a nosebleed?
Yeah.
Because you were so jazzed.
And someone said, what's going on? Why is there blood coming from your nose? Sticker chart! Complete.
How old were you?
I think I was 11, or maybe 10.
Okay.
Summer, birthday. It was final year of primary school.
You know, that's when life makes a little bit of sense, isn't it, when things like that happen?
I remember swapping a stack of stickers almost as high as my arm for a single last sticker.
Yeah.
But suddenly all of these things were meaningless once the chart was finished. And wow. I didn't want any of this stuff.
Yeah.
It's worthless.
Good yeah. for you. I think the world is divided into people who finish their sticker charts and people like me who Did just in a very dilettante-ish way dabble. And then think, nah.
No, once I was on that ride, I had to complete.
What about in your professional life? Have you had...
Nothing to rival that. Nothing's been as good as the moment of completing the sticker charts.
Yeah. You met Woody Allen, though, right?
I did meet Woody Allen. That was quite exciting. I was oddly dressed exactly like him.
Yeah.
Cord trousers, sports jacket, check shirt.
Under what circumstances did you meet him?
He was filming Cassandra's Dream.
Oh.
Which Sally Hawkins was in.
Yeah.
And
he was
so
doing
I think,
that in the UK?
Yes.
Yeah.
And so I think she invited me to come. But clearly... they'd been warned at the level of my Woody Allen fandom.
Yeah.
When I went onto the set, everyone seemed to go, oh, you're the Woody Allen.
Especially as you were dressed exactly like
strange that. Person. Yes. And Colin Farrell and Ewan McGregor were there.
Oh, yeah.
Who were very nice and polite, but I could not concentrate at all on them. I go, okay, sure, yeah. Where's Woody?
So did you actually have a little conversation with him?
There was a conversation.
Him? What did you talk about?
I talked about Sven Nykvist a little bit, Ingmar Bergman's cinematographer.
Uh-huh.
There was quite a lot of stuttering. Yeah, he said, you're welcome to stay and watch. And at the end, we stayed quite a while to watch. You can go now. In quite a funny way.
Yeah.
And he shook hands. There was no germophobic.
Right, okay, because that's the story I heard
yeah.
about him, yeah.
That was all fine. Seemed very pleasant and
That's great. So you didn't come away thinking, oh, I wish I hadn't done that.
It wasn't a crushing experience. It was perfectly
serviceable.
Pleasant. And yeah. And he seemed happy to talk about Sven Nykvist.
Yeah. Had he seen any of your work?
He wouldn't shut up about it. He was, I mean, obsessive is too strong. No, I'd hope not.
Do you get to keep the gadgets on Gadget Man?
That's not a good impression. Yeah. Can you do a good Woody Allen impression?
Oh, no. It just involves touching your glasses a lot.
Yeah.
It's strange meeting people who you're very familiar with.
Yes.
Because you feel you're in the middle of a conversation and they're at the start of possibly wanting to avoid one. Whereas you're going, hey, remember that time I saw you on the... Ah, and that other thing you did? And especially with Woody Allen, who can be reduced to a simple line drawing when you recognise him.
What was the first Woody Allen film you saw that made an impression?
Well,
that made an impression?
It actually was Another Woman, which is a strange one to start with.
Oh, I don't think I've seen that one.
Yes, well, my friend Ben Ramster, his parents were both psychiatrists, and so they really liked Woody Allen, they liked that one. And I remember watching that, and so I started with the serious ones, that in September, maybe.
Gosh, haven't seen that either.
And then watched the other and went, oh, he's quite funny as well. So, yes, it was a strange way round. And then the stand-up CD, which I think is the best stand-up album.
What's your favourite routine on there?
Oh, crumb. I mean, it is... there isn't anything bad on that stand-up CD. I can't... Oh,
is there just the one CD?
I do like it when he... They're all running through the street. They've all fallen asleep and they all are hypnotised and they're running down the street together and they decide to work as one truck.
Oh, yeah.
That is just as such... He really does do incredible jokes. But, you know, I cheated on my metaphysics paper. I looked within the soul of the boy next to me.
Yeah, that's great.
I mean, these are amazing jokes. Amazing jokes with an amazing character.
Mm.
It's rare that there are both. And that character can do surreal jokes and jokes about being in the real world, and they're completely fluid, and it's extraordinary.
Hello, Adam Buxton here. I'm in my nutty room, just setting the scene for the last couple of bits of conversation with myself and Richard. These took place on the plane back from Lisbon to the UK after four very enjoyable days of filming. And the first conversation that we had on the plane was about the subject of television presenters. And this is what was said in that important exchange.
Do you think Vernon Kay, if pushed, could unpack his entire methodology? Would there be a methodology?
Yeah.
Would he say, sometimes, you know, I know when to push, I know when to back off.
How could you doubt that?
I don't know. I wonder whether... I'd like to say that I think Vernon would probably be very modest about what is undeniably a considerable skill set. And I think he would say, you know, I just feel it, or I rely on...
Oh, right, okay.
I think he would downplay it. Well, I wonder whether he would...
You might be right, but I bet you there are presenters. I mean...
Go on.
There is, obviously...
I hate the way I said go on there, as if somehow I was granting you... Go on. You're very welcome.
Yeah.
There you go.
Thanks very much.
It's your floor. It's your floor.
There is, obviously, a skill to it, right? There's such a thing as a good presenter and a bad presenter. And there are some people who are really good at it and some people who aren't so good.
Who's your top five?
Oh, man. Well, the thing is, the problem is that it's a bit of a thankless task because if you're really good at it, it's sort of invisible and no one ever really gives you any props.
Tell me about it. The Dermots.
I think Anton Deck are pretty great.
Talk to me.
I asked them to be on this podcast and they said no.
They're the Daniel Day-Lewis of presenting. I think they are so in character.
Yeah.
You think it's them, but it's not them.
You don't reckon? You reckon there's a secret Anton Deck?
Of course, they've got to keep some Antandek back for themselves.
Of course.
And for their for those dear to them.
Yeah.
They make it look like it's just breathing, but it's not just breathing.
No. Well, this is probably exactly why they didn't want to be on the podcast, because they knew the Buckles would absolutely strip all this away.
They don't show their swan legs.
Sure. They're really good, man. They're hugely likeable.
They are.
They create a comfortable atmosphere.
I have zero beef with them.
Right.
Nothing.
Who's your favourite, or one of them?
Well, I like Kenneth Clark. The things I like about him, it's just empire. It's true empire.
Yep.
I like how squinty he looks. He just looks as if the sun is barreling into his eyes.
Yeah.
It sounds like he hasn't had a drink of water for 4 days. He's always...
Is he clicky?
He's very clicky in a wonderful way.
Oh, there's your tea.
Thank you very much. Great.
Do you want to pause while you do your tea?
No, it's fine. I'll just bag up and move on. Okay. Kevin MacLeod. For me, I've never tired of listening to Kevin MacLeod. Anything MacLeod is involved with is a joy. I love him. I really do. My wife and I don't think it would be to overstate it, adore him.
Yeah.
I love the sound of his voice. It's
so deep.
Do
you sit there and watch Grand Designs and comment on great things about him that you love?
Yes, yeah. We go, that was a great sum up. He knows where the tension is, but he's not going to exploit it.
Yeah.
He can ask about money in a way that doesn't seem gauche.
Uh-huh.
He cares. He's always looking to see... Sometimes it's not gone well. We know it's not gone well. Everyone knows it's gone not gone well. But MacLeod will say the things that he likes about it.
Yeah.
He'll say, yes, it's a difficult space. But what they've done to it is very brave. I genuinely think he is a force for good.
Yeah, sure.
Mel and Sue.
Mel and Sue, yeah.
I think they're brilliant. They're really funny. I like them.
Yeah, they've come into their own. I like them more now than I used to back in the day, but that's possibly because we felt competitive with them, me and Joe.
Right.
Because they had like lunch and they were kind of mainstream and...
Oh, I see, yes. Grills?
Grills is a ludicrous proposition, isn't he? I mean, I did watch Survivors or whatever it was, the island or...
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Well, I hadn't seen it, but then my wife... I was suggesting watching a movie or something.
Okay.
And she said, oh, God, no, I don't want to watch a movie. Can we watch The Island?
I see.
And I really didn't want to watch it, but I thought, here's a good opportunity for me to be nice and not be a real prick and sulk.
Okay.
And so I said, yeah, okay. Like that. In a totally non-passive-aggressive way.
I really liked how... cheerful your voice began there.
Okay, good idea. Do you want to watch it? I was like, no, but let's watch it.
Now that I know that you don't want to watch it, I can't enjoy it.
No, that's okay. I'm interested. It looks interesting.
Oh, great. No, it's gone. No, we'll just watch what you want to watch. We'll watch what you want to watch.
Come on.
It's fine. No, actually, I'm tired.
I want to watch it. Let's watch it.
I'm actually tired.
Let's watch it.
I'm happy just to read.
I want to watch The Island.
I'm happy just to read.
Look at it.
Don't.
It's my favourite programme. It's got Bear Grylls. Look, the guy's just fallen off the cliff. He could have broken his back. What's wrong with you? You're cold.
Please.
Go to bed then.
I just want to rest, okay?
No, that's not how it went. Mm-hmm. It was way cheerier than that.
Okay.
In the past, I would have.
You would have really made her pay for that.
Not really. Not massively.
Well, like fines?
Just some low-level sulking.
Okay.
Or maybe I would have said... hey, you watch this. I'm going to go and just stand outside.
Okay.
Or I'm going to do some work or something. You know?
It's fine. I'm just going to lie on the floor on the ball.
I would have stretched and gone, I think I'm going to... Or maybe gone to bed. I'm going to go to bed.
Okay.
But I didn't do that. Gosh, instead, we watched Grills.
The psychodrama is just... Right. It's intense.
Grills.
Yeah.
This is an advert for Squarespace. Hey guys, it's Broshak with me, Paul Broshak. We got Mike here. We're going to talk about his new MMA comedy special. We're going to talk about his view counts, and we're going to talk about conspiracy theories. What's up, Mike?
Hello, Paul.
Hey, brother.
I'm fine, thank you. I don't want to talk about any of those things anymore.
You don't?
No. I want to talk about... I built a website, Paul.
All right, stream some fights, settle some beefs, stick it to the elites, that kind of thing.
No, it's mainly dog pictures, Paul. And I did it on Squarespace. Have you heard of Squarespace? I went to squarespace.com/Buxton and I did a free trial. And I tried some of the beautiful templates, Paul, and I typed things in. I dragged in pictures of the dogs. And before I knew it, I had a website, Paul. So I bought it and I've made some very sweet dog t-shirts and I sell those on the shop on the website.
Uh-huh. But do you still fight and stuff?
A little bit, but not really. Oh, and Paul, I wanted to tell you that when it comes time to buy your website or domain on Squarespace, if you use the offer code Buxton, you save 10%. Paul.
Thanks, Mike. Where'd you do that free trial?
Squarespace.com/Buxton.
And how sweet were the dogs?
Very.
Hey, so we had about half an hour left of our flight back to the UK, and Richard and I started talking about Woody Allen again. And that's kind of a difficult area, obviously. But we were focusing mainly on the how difficult it is to differentiate between an artist who may have behaved in a way that pretty much everyone would consider unacceptable, and the work that that artist creates. So we already heard that Richard's a big fan of Woody Allen's work, but as most people, I think, are aware, Woody Allen was accused of molesting his daughter when she was 7. And the case was dropped in 1993 after several investigations proved inconclusive. But then Woody Allen's daughter in 2014 repeated those allegations on a New York Times blog, and the whole case was brought very much back into the forefront of extremely passionate public debate. And I was interested to hear from Richard how he rationalizes the problems of being a Woody Allen fan in a world that seems more and more to demand that we stand very firmly on one side or the other of any issue, no matter how complex or how impossible it may be for those outside of that controversial case to know the real truth. And we didn't even attempt to discuss the specifics of the Woody Allen case. But even talking about the quandaries thrown up in its wake made us feel as though we were stepping into a minefield somewhat. And neither of us is particularly skilled at nor relishes the prospect of having arguments about this kind of thing on social media. And so you may think, well, don't talk about it on the podcast then. But I think that I want to talk about these things. I think it's interesting and important in a way. And I didn't actually say that much in this conversation. It was mainly Richard telling me how he feels about it, which I found very interesting. So this is what he had to say.
Before we were talking about Woody Allen.
Yes.
And when we concluded our conversation, you said, I feel as if I need to sort of add some kind of caveat.
Well, yes, it's interesting. You originally said to me when you were talking about doing this podcast whether it could be on the subject of the difficulty of being a Woody Allen fan.
Right.
And is it something you could even particularly discuss? And it's a very difficult situation, I suppose, because I guess it calls into question the idea of what necessary overlap is there between someone's life and what their work is. Are they necessarily intertwined? Can you enjoy work produced by someone whose actions you may not approve of?
Mm-hmm.
What's the link? I remember when trial by media was used as a phrase to disparage a certain kind of process. You wonder, was something as sensitive as the allegations in the Woody Allen case, how on earth, as a person outside of it, could you know what happened? It's a... I suppose, what do you do as a citizen? And there's a necessary component about it, which is a public figure is going through a court case and it's of intense interest to everyone. And then there's another side to it where you go, do we trust a court to weigh the evidence of these matters fairly and accurately? And is there an inbuilt bias, or is there an inbuilt tendency for there to be miscarriages of justice when rich or powerful people
miscarriages in favour of the accused.
In favour of the powerful person. And so I think there's probably a suspicion
that he's
which
getting
is,
away
which
with
is often justified, it seems.
Well, I guess it seemed that way with OJ, didn't it?
Yeah, that you have a figure who, because of their wealth, because of their power, because of their access perhaps to better legal counsel, may get away with things that someone without their resources.
Good. Ligações determinada e ignorada por Flight Connection Center.
They're actually weighing in on this topic.
She's saying, she's saying you're sick. And you are insensitive.
Right. As soon as we're recording this, it's got a different feeling to the conversation we will have, because I feel you know me and will forgive my lack of rigour, forgive my uncertainties and my contradictory logic, that you're going to seek to retrieve from what I say something of sense. And I
this
feel,
is if the conversation wasn't being
yes,
recorded. Right.
No, I don't think that changes now that it's been recorded from your perspective, but I sort of feel aware that as soon as you go on record talking about something, do you have a kind of responsibility to make sure, one, that you're accountable for what you say, and two, that what you're saying is far less speculative than you might allow yourself in a conversation with a friend? So, you know, I started watching Woody Allen films when I was a teenager. I remember being a Woody Allen fan when this whole thing happened, there being two stages seemingly to it, like the Sun Yi thing, which is, that alone is an incredibly incendiary situation.
Yeah.
What do I do? Do I go, I don't approve of how Woody Allen conducted that, I can't enjoy his films anymore? Now, that I think could be a legitimate response. But if someone else continues to enjoy his films, should I hector that person and say, you can't watch what that person does because they're a bad person? Or I'm not sure I really believe in the idea of good or bad people.
Right.
I feel that everyone, you know, it's like that Goethe thing where he said, I cannot conceive of a crime that I myself could not have committed. And I suppose compassion has no value unless it's extended to everyone.
Uh-huh.
It can't be something that's only extended to some people by its nature.
I think the thing that happens,
everyone is capable of great evil, I think. Everyone is.
Yes, absolutely. I guess the thing that happens now when these subjects are talked about is that people feel you have to make a
take sides.
You have to take sides and you have to make a clear, easily digestible statement about a serious subject. When it's something like this, the allegations against Woody Allen, you have to consider all the people going through something similar and the victims of similar kinds of situations whose voices aren't being heard.
Yep.
And then suddenly that case with Woody Allen becomes emblematic of all those others, and it becomes fused with something different. And so it's then impossible to talk about the facts of the Woody Allen case in isolation.
Yes, it's very hard. There's a really great George Saunders story called A Thought Experiment.
Uh-huh.
And it's done metaphorically, but it's sort of in his non-fiction collection, The Brain Dead Megaphone, which is another brilliant article on media and just how the fact that a prime component of media is to sell itself does not necessarily mean it can't contain truthful things, but that is unignorable. You know, there are many terrible things happening that aren't being reported. There is an overlap here with someone who people want to know about. Uh-huh. And that is a factor that is unignorable in it.
Yeah.
But in this other story, the thought experiment, it's an urge towards understanding. And wouldn't it be more interesting, rather than having so many things, I guess, on the internet which seek to immediately condemn and to judge and to categorize, to understand and complicate things? But that isn't very often the case, I find.
Right.
And I tend to like people who say, I don't know, I'm not sure, and the reality is
wishy-washy.
But you know, we don't know, do we?
No, of course we don't
know. We obviously don't know. And I don't know. Can you listen to Leadbelly?
Because of the kind of person that he was.
Yeah.
And Chuck Berry.
Do you like Caravaggio?
And,
I don't know.
You know, Philip Larkin.
And also, what did he represent anyway? What is he exactly meant to embody?
Woody Allen we're talking about now.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, for example, I was watching a rerun of Sesame Street. And,
That he directed.
That he directed. And anyway, Bill Cosby came on.
Oh, yeah.
And you go, oh. What is this? Meanwhile, my daughter's happily watching it. What's occurring in that situation is relatively complex. I'm going, it seems pretty likely that Bill Cosby has assaulted in a grievous, awful way a number of women. And yet there's this thing occurring here where he is a person, he's a human.
And he is innocently entertaining a child.
Who knows nothing of this?
Right.
That's a strange situation, a very dissonant situation. Would it be more comfortable to say, no, he's completely excommunicated, everything that he's produced should be burnt, destroyed,
erased? I mean, that's what happened with Savile, though, isn't it? Savile, there's the process of redacting Savile has been fairly thorough.
But what does it undo?
You're trying to reduce the likelihood of that offence, of seeing him and being reminded of what he did, and having to struggle with that complicated set of feelings. I mean, it's less difficult with Savile because it's not like...
Yes, of course.
it's not like we've been robbed of a
But obviously, body of work, someone who encounters in the future some work of Jimmy Savile, knowing nothing of what he did, and who manages to be entertained by it, is probably not a participant in a crime scene.
Uh-huh.
It's very complex. I don't know what the call for a boycott is precisely to do with.
Who are you talking about
now? With, say, Woody Allen.
Right. Well, I guess for Woody Allen, people would say, okay, here's a good place to start. Let's not trumpet his genius.
Why not? It may be the awful thing that, I don't know. I mean, it's almost impossible to have a conversation about it, because there are real people involved who are living out the consequences of whatever happened very publicly and very painfully. And the idea of glibly or idly speculating about it seems monstrous on record in a certain way, because there's always a kind of interest in public trials, which seems to me awful. Like, what business is it of ours? Paul McCartney's divorce from Heather Mills, this is none of my business whatsoever. So on that level, it seems, how can we speculate about it? There's another level, which is, Do we in any way trust a legal process to sort this out at all? If the answer is no, is there an argument for saying we need to look at the legal system, which is clearly consistently miscarrying cases like this, that there's an inherent problem? Now, what do you do on the flip side of it? That means that there is no possible way ever for someone to clear their name.
Mm-hmm.
There must be cases where an accusation is false. That must exist. If we are sort of saying there is no way you can ever trust the legal system to accurately determine what has happened, then anyone who is accused of something, it's as good as they've done it. Aside from they may escape punishment, but in terms of the notion that they did do that, that will never be eradicated, no matter what occurred. And then there's another part of it, which is, can people be separated from what they do? Can, let's take the idea, why am I saying we? But take the idea of good people and bad people. Does that even exist? Are there some people who just are doing, who are inherently good? Are there people who are inherently evil? What do we do with evil people? Are they like, is there a good people club and then a bad person club, and then we can't have anything from the bad person club? Aren't we all culpable for something going wrong?
Yeah.
I mean, do we not share culpability? And there's this awful idea that somehow culpability lies without us, and that feels to me terrifying. The kind of awful certainty of people feeling that, oh, over there are some terrible people and we're the good people pointing out the terrible people. Now, of course, there's still crime and there are terrible things that are done, and I do think very often there has to be punishment. But I don't know, there's a component of awful smugness, I think, that sometimes exists in the accusation of people not involved whatsoever. It doesn't feel like they really want to get to the bottom of an incredibly complex situation. It feels like they just want to say someone's an arsehole.
Right.
And that's kind of, and if you don't agree with them, you are also an arsehole. And that doesn't seem complex enough. And then the other thing that's interesting is, how are your feelings about someone's work affected by who they are? How are your feelings about the album Nevermind are affected by Kurt Cobain having killed himself? Can you still enjoy it in the same way? Or that Lead Belly was a murderer? Or
yeah,
whatever, you know, can you still obtain joy? And can someone have failed utterly? Can someone have done something so terrible that it's almost unimaginable, and can they still
create,
produce joy?
Beautiful, yeah.
And I'd say the answer has to be yes.
Well, clearly they have done, yeah. And also, just time passing and distance enables us to enjoy work that people have made hundreds of years ago.
Yeah.
Who were almost certainly low quality human beings,
yeah,
in some cases,
but also,
but we don't worry about it because it's just not,
yes, there's a time factor, you
yeah
know.
It's heartbreaking that you're, you know, so hard to enjoy things and to have an uncomplicated enthusiasm for things. Well, nowadays you're just almost dreading the moment when it turns out that your favorite this or that,
yes,
has got a really seamy underbelly.
Although in a way, that's the least of the one's problems in some ways.
Yeah.
You kind of go, you know, if someone finds it harder to enjoy Sleeper, that's so what, in a certain way. Hey.
I was like, hey, she hasn't done anything wrong.
Hey, what's wrong with Louise Werner? What's she done? But it's, oh, crumbs. You know, I don't know. What the hell am I doing wading in on this in a form that's going to be a Twitter cluster, fluster.
Have things that have been said on this podcast been pulled out of context and used?
Not so far as I'm aware, except for me talking about women putting on makeup. Well, I talked about people putting on makeup, but I used as an example a woman putting on makeup.
Okay.
And I
did find that quite offensive, actually.
Well, I mean, when I listened back to it, I could see how people would think that maybe I meant that, but I just assumed that it was so obvious I didn't. I thought, well, if you're listening to this podcast, you've probably heard other things I've said. You know that I wouldn't give a woman a hard time or anyone a hard time for doing something like that.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you just read between the lines and, like, give me the benefit of the doubt?
I think I'm often very defensive and worried about saying what I think because
you don't want to be misinterpreted.
Well, it being on record inevitably alters it.
Yeah.
Like Abbas Kiarostami said, why can't you get the feeling on camera that you get as soon as you say cut and everyone relaxes? There's something inherently skewed as soon as being recorded, because I can't help but have a part of my brain go, this ought to make sense. This ought to be like when someone cogent writes something and presents it for public consumption. Whereas what's interesting about these things and podcasts is that you feel you're just having a conversation, but in effect you're making a statement.
I think some people feel, though, that... I mean, the example of me talking about the makeup thing is totally trivial, really.
Yeah.
You know, but I did feel defensive about it when people started criticising me. But I think maybe those people felt like I'd been busted and I was being defensive because actually...
Yes, they saw the real you.
Yeah, and maybe I needed to look again at some of my attitudes that I wasn't embarrassed about and that I freely expressed, but maybe needed to be changed.
And maybe that is... And that, I'm sure, can be valuable.
Yeah.
But crippling self-consciousness probably isn't very valuable.
No.
And also, a kind of paralysis, which is about trying to second-guess
possible objections.
That seems like politics.
Yeah.
And also, probably people are listening to your podcast because you're funny and entertaining and they want to be entertained. And they are. And maybe they, you know, I don't know how funny this 20-minute bit is going to be.
I'll chop it right down to make you sound quite glib.
Okay, that's good.
So, there we go. I hope you found that at least interesting. I did. And I really appreciate Richard being up for talking to me about so many things and being so eloquent and such good company. And I can't thank him enough, really. And also the crew of Travel Man, who put up with me, just insisting on podcasting at every available opportunity in what must have been quite an irritating fashion, especially as they were all trying to get a job done. But they were very nice about it, and I really had a great time. So thanks very much to them. And Richard, thanks to you for downloading this podcast. I always feel as if I should be reeling off a whole list of things that you can go and spend your money on to fund the podcast, but currently, they are not in place. Maybe if you're listening in the future, that will have changed. I mean, I really would like to one day have T-shirts and baseball caps and, jock straps and all the regular stuff. But so far, haven't got that together. One day. Well, still early days, though, isn't it? It's just number 25. Early days. And what else? I suppose, if you're listening to these podcasts as they come out, then you may be frustrated by the lack of regularity and, there's no specific day that they come out on, and sometimes you wait a week and sometimes it's two or even longer. And I appreciate that that must be very, very difficult and frustrating for you. And I'm so sorry. Sounds like I'm being sarcastic now. And I am half being sarcastic. But I also do appreciate that it must be kind of annoying. So I apologise. But, you know, it's because I mainly do this thing on my own. And that continues to be the case despite my best efforts. Having said that, I very much appreciate the help that I've been given by Seamus Murphy Mitchell. Thanks very much indeed, Seamus, for your notes and your input. And that's about it. Rosie! Rosie, come on. Rosie, come on, let's head back. Here she comes. You up for a flyby? Here comes the hairy bullet. Oh, you're coming to say hi. I thought you were just going to go straight past. Are you all right? Hey, don't wander away. How are you doing, famous dog? What's it like being a famous dog? Rosie. Okay. I mean, you used to be able to just speak to me. What's happened to that?
Well, I still can. I can still speak occasionally.
All right, there you go. So why do you not just speak to me then?
Because I don't know if you know, but I'm famous. And I'm like a YouTube personality.
You know, 6 million. All right, so it's a lot, but it's hardly Gangnam Style.
It's more than any of your videos have ever got.
That is true. Listen, Rosie, don't let the fame go to your head, though. I wouldn't want you just to turn into a dick.
Okay, thanks. Good advice. I'm off to kill a squirrel and do a poo on the carpet of your office again.
All right. Have a good one.
Oh, well.
Thanks very much indeed, listeners. Take care of yourselves and each other. And I look forward to us being together again before too long. I love you. Bye!